Jan Harald Brundvand is the Dean of Urban Legend Studies. He's written several books on the subject, including the Encyclopedia of Urban Legends. Steve Paulson wanted to find out more about urban legends, and since Steve is a dedicated and thorough journalist, he didn't want to get his information from a friend of Brundvand's. He wanted to go straight to the source, Brundvand himself. Steve started by asking Brundvand for a definition of an urban legend.
I like to say a true story that's too good to be true. It's told as a true story. It's credited to a friend of a friend. It's plausible, but it's too perfect, and it's been told too many times. It's a little different from tall tales in a sense. People that tell them are not deliberately lying or stretching the truth or perpetrating a hoax or something. They're passing on a bit of news that they've heard.
So they often think that this is true. And don't you find cases where people swear that it's true? A friend of a friend told me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Friend of a friend is the operative thing here. We call it a FOAF in folklore studies, F-O-A-F. I don't know the guy it happened to. It didn't happen to me, but I know a guy who knows someone that it happened to. And sometimes it's a relative or a coworker or a neighbor or something like that. And people tell them partly to entertain, partly to sort of be the center of attention. It's easier than telling jokes where you really have to get the timing, the dialect, and everything just right. And people are leery of trying to start a joke. But they tell them to deliver a warning.
Now, I've noticed as I was going through your book, Encyclopedia of Urban Legends, that pets are a very common theme. And yeah, there are various stories about pets. Another one is the choking Doberman.
Yeah. I titled a book with that, The Choking Doberman. It was a very big story in, it was about 83 or 84. I think people still know it, but they probably don't tell it person to person. They probably read about it. A woman comes home from shopping, and her dog, it doesn't have to be a Doberman, but many versions it is. You know, her dog is gagging, lying on the floor, choking. And she puts her packages down, grabs the dog, rushes to the car, drives to the vet, and the vet says,
I'm going to have to perform a tracheotomy so he can breathe. Oh. You go home now. I'll call you later.
As soon as you're finished?
Yes, Mrs. Beaumont. Now, if you'll excuse me, time's wasting.
So the woman left her dog there and went back home. Hello?
Mrs. Beaumont, it's Dr. Fairley. Get out of your house now.
What?
Go to your neighbors. I've already called the police. Get out of there now.
Why?
Just do it.
All right, but why? What's going on, officers?
No time to explain now, ma'am. Go wait by our car. We'll let you know if it's safe to come back.
What's this all about?
Just wait by the car. Come on, Al. Let's go.
Dr. Fairley, what is going on?
Mrs. Beaumont, do you know why Bruno was having so much trouble breathing? There were three human fingers stuck in his throat.
Fingers?
Yes. And that's why I called the police and phoned to tell you to get out of your house. I'm afraid that whoever those fingers belong to might still be inside.
Oh, my God.
We found him. He was lying in the closet in the bedroom, unconscious. Bloody mess. My partner's calling an ambulance. We found a gun. But he won't be using it again. Not with his right hand, anyway. You're lucky that dog will eat anything it can get its hands on.
Or anyone that'll get his hands on him.
Now, can you trace the origins of
that
story?
That particular story, it's possible to connect it to it's sort of complicated, but to a legend that's well known in Wales about Prince Llewellyn and his dog Gellert. And if you visit Wales, you can actually visit the grave of Gellert, the brave dog. And in the Welsh version, the prince comes home, the door of his residence, I am imagining it to be a castle or something, is open, and the baby has been in a crib there, and the crib is overturned, and he doesn't see the baby, and the dog is lying there bloodied and panting. And he kills the dog, thinking the dog has killed the baby, only to walk in the next room and find a wolf that has come in and attacked the baby. And the dog has defended the baby against the wolf and killed the wolf, and the baby crawls out, you know, bloodied, but okay. Well, it may not seem to be much connection, but I found that versions of that story got told in Canada, and it was a trapper and his dog, and it gradually sort of evolved into this. Instead of a wolf coming in, it's an intruder. Instead of the bloody dog, it's the fingers and so on. I think it's possible to draw a connection between these. At least that's what I suggested in writing about it. But I would say, you know, the question of origins most of the time is just up in the air. I mean, it's like saying, where do fairy tales come from? You really can't say exactly.
But you have to wonder, at least when a modern version of one of these stories starts circulating, who started it?
Yeah, well, it's a puzzling question, an interesting question. Sometimes I think it's what I call the what-if principle. You know, what if a little poodle got put in a microwave oven? What would happen?
No, so that's an urban legend.
Yeah, and so you get the story of the microwave pet. Well, I don't think anyone actually tried this, but I think sort of the what-if question is in people's minds, and then somebody, who knows who, some, you know, anonymous Homer genius, turn it into a story. After all, we sometimes put the wrong thing in a microwave oven, and there's an accident of some kind, you know, a potato explodes if you forget to poke holes in it or something. So I think that what-if thing might work. There probably are a few, I think very few urban legends that sprang from a real event, which got modified as it was talked about. But most of them, I don't think it's possible to say. I think you just have to say that everybody that tells it is part of the process of creating it, adding details, localizing it, expanding on one part, dropping another part, and so on.
Now, there's another pet story I came across, the hair dryer, hair spelled H-A-R-E.
Yeah, right.
What happens in that one?
Yeah, I heard Johnny Carson tell that on The Tonight Show. Not in person, I mean, I was just watching it one night. He told us it's something that happened to a neighbor. It's really got two pets in it.
This happened to a woman who used to live next door to my aunt. One day, her pet terrier came trotting into the kitchen.
Oh, my God! Terrence!
The dog was carrying a dead rabbit in its mouth. It was the next door neighbor's pet rabbit, Roger. The woman took it upstairs to the bathroom to try and clean it up. First, she gave it a shampoo. Then she used a blow dryer to dry off its fur. Looked a lot better than when she took it out of the dog's mouth. The woman checked her next-door neighbor's driveway. Both cars were gone, so she went ahead and took the rabbit back to their yard. She put the rabbit back into the cage. She even went to the trouble of propping it up against the chicken wire so it looked like it was alive. Or had been until recently. The next morning, the woman saw a police car in front of the neighbor's house.
Excuse me, officer. What's going on?
Oh, it's just a nuisance call, ma'am. Seems these people's pet rabbit died yesterday. Then some nut went and dug it up out of the yard and put it back in its cage. Some people.
About 2 weeks later, the late Michael Landon told the same story as happening to him on The Tonight Show. I was just lucky enough to happen to see both of these. This isn't where the story came from. In fact, when Johnny told it, the story was already widely told. I'm just imagining that at least half of his studio audience and the same percentage of his national television audience must have heard the story and known what was coming. But it's characteristic of urban legend. There was a very big story for about 6 months. It was all over the country. People were telling it. They were localizing it. They were, you know, introducing variations.
So that's interesting. So it sort of explodes
onto the
scene.
That's right.
And then kind of disappears.
Well, I think it passes into popular culture. They go into film and TV, advertising, cartoons. I've got coffee mugs, T-shirts, all kinds of artifacts that picture things from urban legends. My favorite version of that involved a babysitter who, when the dog brought the rabbit in, washed it in woolite and hung it up by its ears in the shower to drip dry. You know, why? Rather than using the hair. I suppose, you know, you should have a version where they try to dry it in the microwave oven. You just kind of combine a couple of legends. But people told this so earnestly as if it had really happened. And again, it was always at least three steps removed, a friend of a friend or a friend of a friend of a friend.
A friend of a friend says she read about this in a newspaper or saw it on the news. I can't remember which. It seems there was this cement truck driver. He was taking this load of wet cement mix to an address which just so happened to be in his own neighborhood. So he decided to stop by his house and have a cup of coffee with his wife. Well, when he got to his place, he saw a brand new silver Cadillac in his driveway. He stopped the truck and walked around the side of the house, curious to find out who the Cadillac belonged to. He heard voices. It sounded like they were coming from the kitchen. He sneaked a peek in the window from a spot where he couldn't be seen. He saw his wife talking to an attractive young man who was quite well dressed. The truck driver didn't have to see any more. He put two and two together and snuck back out to the driveway. He emptied the whole load of cement through the open window until the car was full of it. When he came home from work later that afternoon, his wife was crying.
Uh,
What's wrong, Brenda?
Oh, Mel, it's awful.
What's awful?
Did you see that new Cadillac in the driveway?
Oh, yeah. Whose is it? Hey, how did it get full of cement?
It's yours.
Mine?
Yes, I bought it for you. I've been saving up for years. The salesman delivered it this afternoon, but somebody filled it with cement. They must have done it while we were going over the papers. But why would somebody want to fill a Cadillac with cement, Mel? Why?
Now, often there are some interesting sociological dimensions in these stories. For instance, with the solid cement Cadillac, the guy who drives the cement truck is working class, and it would seem that, I mean, part of the anger has to do with the rich guy with the Cadillac in the driveway.
Yes, that's it exactly. Yeah, it's the blue-collar guy and the spiffy, slick rich guy inside. It's also been suggested that he's kind of symbolically putting a chastity belt on his wife by filling this cavity and making it unusable. Now, I don't propose these Freudian interpretations usually, but other folklores have developed some ideas like that. For example, the Hookman legend, where the guy is supposedly lurking outside the car in Lover's Lane, and he's an escape maniac with a hook for a hand, and the kids in the car hear a warning on the radio when they drive off, the hook is torn off. And right away, some folklores have suggested it's a castration symbol. The hook is a phallic symbol, and it's torn off, and it's a sort of a counterpart for the guy in the car trying to get his hooks into the girl and so on. There are all kinds of possibilities of what these might mean.
Jan Harald Brunvand is the author of The Encyclopedia of Urban Legends. He spoke with Steve Paulson.